welcome back to another Podcast of Honor, the first one of 2014. I am not Matt Waters. My name is Chris GST. I am the web admin for PWP. This is going to be a different scene for Podcast of Honor. We have a special guest on today, but before we get to him, as always, I am joined by the former Column of Honor writer, Ari Berenstein. Ari, how are you doing, sir?
Doing well, GST. Obviously, Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to everybody on the internet land, even though it's almost 2 weeks into the new year. But, you know, we took a while off. We had a lot go on in Ring of Honor over the last few weeks. So we're back to talk about it. And I'm glad to be back and glad to be talking to everybody here.
Absolutely. And we have our fellow co-host of the ROH Retrocast, Chris Micchio. How are you doing, sir?
Doing great, guys. Glad to be here.
A lot has happened, obviously, in Ring of Honor, Ari, as you mentioned. Guys, I don't even know where to begin. I first got to say, I think everyone who has listened to us on PWP, thank you for listening. But you've heard my point of views on Final Battle. That's been the big event that occurred during our little hiatus. And, of course, we also have the TV tapings to talk about. So before we get into the news, I want to let you know we're going to give everyone listening ample time. We're going to cover Final Battle, a lot of news and stuff going around Ring of Honor, and then we're going to get to TV talk, and we will give you ample time to know that spoilers are coming. So if you want, you can stop listening, and if you don't want to, you can hear our thoughts on what happened, because it's a lot of big stuff. So guys, let's get into it. Final Battle, I think a lot of news surrounding it was, one, the return of Chris Hero to Ring of Honor, which we almost didn't see. And then, two, Davey Richards gone from the company. Sadly, those were two kind of the major stories going in. And, of course, you had the triple threat for the world title. You had a match where the loser would no longer be able to use the pile driver. I mean, that's big news, right? And then, of course, we had a lot of other good matches. The wrestling, I'm just going to sum up my thoughts. The wrestling was great. I would encourage everyone to go out and buy Final Battle because in terms of Ring of Honor's quality, it's still good wrestling, and some of it is even great wrestling. So go on and support it. But guys, I think everyone has heard my thoughts enough on the show. I've said them on two or three podcasts. So let's get to your opinions. Ari Berenstein, we're going to go with you first. What were your thoughts on Final Battle and everything surrounding it?
When I wrote on Twitter coming back from the show that evening, and it was a hell of a time coming back from the show that evening, maybe even worse than the blizzard of Final Battle 2009, I thought it was a good show, notable, not the greatest, but very good. I'm actually almost happier that the response I've read from there's been so many reviews on the show, and everyone seems to have really good things to say about it. And like, in fact, some people think it's one of the best shows of 2013, and I would say it's definitely one of the better shows for Ring of Honor in 2013. I think, interestingly, that, you know, one of the things we're not talking about as a result of it not being an iPay-per-view is any kind of failure in delivery, because Ring of Honor gave the people video on demand within 2 days, just like they said they would. So I really think a lot of this kind of corroborates what I was saying on previous podcasts, is that, you know, the message, the takeaway from the show isn't anything that Ring of Honor did wrong. It's, in fact, everything that Ring of Honor did right on the show. And really good word of mouth has, I think, led to a lot of people checking it out where, through VOD and writing up some good stuff. Live and in person, I had a really good time. I was with my cousin Jay again for the second time. We went to Manhattan Mayhem 5 together, and we went to go together. We got general admission tickets. We actually came in late, but we were gonna sit behind sit behind some kids, and it was really kind of cramped, and I could kind of tell it wasn't a great seat. So we went up to toward the back end of the lower balcony, and found a really good section where people were kind of really focused on the matches. Good sight line, no kids. And a couple people who were there for the first time are really kind of going crazy and marking out for some of the things they saw on the show. So it was really good. It was just a really good, pleasant live experience. Saw that, you know, there's a lot more people than the previous show, and the concessions and the merchandise stands were jam packed. I couldn't get any kind of DVDs or T-shirts because it was like four or five rows back. So I was like, you know what, I'm not even gonna try. I'll get some stuff online if I need to. As far as the big shows, the stuff that happened, obviously the main event was really good. A little bit slow in starting, but then obviously, you know, it's a triangle match, so a lot of the stuff, the conventions of a triangle match, you see Elgin, Jay, and Adam do it. But it was really good by the end, and Elgin got over huge by the end of it with his power moves. I thought, to me, that there were two or three major highlights. One was early on, the first half of the show was the Young Bucks versus Adrenaline Rush match. Awesome match, and I was really just taken aback by how many people were just totally in love with the Young Bucks. They were super over. You know, you couldn't get anyone to boo them if they super kicked your mother. They probably, you know, pop for that if they want, as opposed to hating you for it. The super kick that they super kick outside to ACH, as ACH was diving in midair, was just insane. Then there was the Kevin Steen, Mike Bennett brawl, which was started out as a stretcher match, but really kind of turned into a last man standing match of sorts. I think Steen created something really good here. It was really one of the best things I've ever seen Michael Bennett in. And they really played up the grudge aspect of it. Maria did her part and got a lot of heat. Kevin Steen was obviously beloved, and he just did a whole bunch of violence on Bennett and Maria, and the fans loved him for it. Then the second match, you have the awful debacle that was the Outlaws Inc. match versus Red Dragon. And I know some people have said here and there, like, oh, it really wasn't that bad. But live in the building, man, I have to tell you, it was definitely awful. just hearing, and it wasn't so much as, you know, the crowd turned on it very quickly. Maybe even before the guys got in the ring, but if that maybe unnerved some people, or they just didn't have it. You know, there was a lot of botching. There was a lot of things that were loose. Didn't seem like it connected. It was a bad match. There's no way around it. And then obviously the Homicide and Kingston turned heel. I thought they were going to do that regardless, but it was certainly an interesting crowd atmosphere for all that. TV title was a great little 5-minute deal. I thought that was every bit as good as the tag title match was bad. So it was definitely something about, like, in 5 minutes, it's just very rare. And we talked about this in another podcast where we could do like an Ultimate Warrior like squash. It's very rare that happens, but it completely worked here. And Ciampa was super over as a result of it. The Decade debuted out of the tag title match with the mystery partner, was actually BJ Whitmer. It kind of didn't really go over well live, as most people are now well aware of. But this whole thing happened kind of last minute from what I've read, due to what happened with Chris Hero coming late to the building. Hero was supposed to be the original partner, but then they pulled this as sort of a plan B. I wonder how they would have debuted this to begin with, because it really kind of makes sense as far as storyline-wise, and it's very intriguing, but it really wouldn't have worked in any other segment. And obviously, the big thing, as we talked about, David Richards not at the building, was at CCW that evening, has wrestled for Evolve since then. And Chris Hero returning to Ring of Honor. I mean, we kind of all thought that would happen, but we didn't know what happened for sure. And when he came out, he got a huge pop, came back like a conquering hero, no pun intended. And I think, you know, the fans really enjoyed seeing him. It was a really nice little kind of epilogue to the show. It kind of got you a nice swing into what could happen in 2014. Him knocking out, you know, Matt Hardy, and who is aligned with Adam Cole now, and knocking out Adam Cole, really kind of shakes things up a little bit in the main event scene. You're not overly relying on Jay and Michael Elgin. Now you can sort of mix things up with him, and obviously we'll talk about AJ Styles in a little bit. So some very interesting stuff. So I really enjoyed my life experience there. I thought it was worthwhile to go. I was glad I went with Jay. You know, I really think Ring of Honor is setting itself up for a great 2014.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking forward to it too. I'm kind of interested to know what the main event would have been like had Kushiro not came back at that moment. You know, instead it had been in the tag match and then the main event ended the way it did. I kind of think they probably still would have had Hiro come out. But from what I've read and everything that's been put out there, that wasn't in the plans. So that might have not happened. So that's kind of interesting. Were you satisfied though with the main event? Had the main event ended the way it did, would you still have said it was a very good show?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I liked the way that ended. Chris Michio, gotta say, I know that you've had your ups and downs with Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
But Final Battle, I kind of thought you'd go, but you didn't. So
no, I had my cousin had bought tickets to take me to see Queens of the Stone Age for my birthday. He bought the tickets way back in September, and I hadn't really kind of put two and two together on the date. And it was just like when it kind of got close, and it was like, oh, wait a minute, yeah. So that was like that was the first Final Battle I've missed live since 2005.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a. It was weird. I'm not going to tell you I didn't have a good time at the Queens of the Stone Age concert, because I did. It was a really good show. It was a little uneven for my taste, but that's not for this podcast or anything like that. I did, however, catch back up on the Final Battle show on the VOD a couple days after they put it up, and I got to tell you, it was a great show. Really enjoyed it. There were certain things on the show that were just like, you know, they were there to be there. But the stuff that they really needed to kind of get across as being important and being top-level stuff, I think they really did. You know, like Ari said with the Bucks, I've seen them live, New York City ROH shows before, but it seemed to me like the crowd was more into them now than ever before. Maybe some of their PWG stuff is kind of leaking out
Absolutely.
To the ROH fans, and, you know, they're kind of seeing what they're doing out there, and maybe it's building a little bit more of a momentum behind them. I would love that because I'm a huge fan of the Bucks. I think they're fantastic. And I thought you know, Adrenaline Rush. I think they did more than hold their own and made themselves look really good in that match. And I was really impressed. The Steen Bennett match, like Ari said, you know, that might be the best match I've seen Mike Bennett in. And it's like, you know, because for the longest time, I didn't think much of him at all. But, you know, he really did a good job in that match. And he made something really, really positive out of that. Like Ari said, you know, he was there, you know, being live with the Outlaw Inc. and Red Dragon match. It came across just as bad on VOD as far as I'm concerned. That was... Yeah, as me and Ari used to talk about all the time when we'd play like SmackDown or something like that, you know, the video game is like, you know, bowling shoe ugly. To a large extent, that match was bowling shoe ugly. And you don't see, you didn't expect it, but then at the same time, you know, when you think about it after the fact, even though you didn't expect it going in, it didn't surprise you that it went that way. I don't think either of you guys would say that you were totally surprised that that match went south in any way, right? I mean, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that, like, I was thinking would be either really good or really bad, and it was really bad.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you look at that and said there was definitely a potential for a stinker in that one.
Yeah, I mean, because you can just tell, like, the brawlers mixing with the technical guys, sometimes that works, a lot of times it doesn't, and it just... the timing just wasn't there, and of course the fallout from it. We haven't seen Outlaw Inc. in Ring of Honor since. Some places have reported it is because of what happened after with a fan and some incident there. You know, a lot of things going on, so who knows? What did you think of the
obstructed of that? But, you know, apparently it happened.
And I wasn't surprised, but at the same time, you know, it was kind of like, oh man, that was just not very good.
What did you think of the main event and, of course, the return of one of your favorite wrestlers from the past?
You know what? Well, first off, let's talk about my favorite ROH performer right now, Adam Cole. All right? Adam Cole is the man. I think you all know that by now. I don't even think I have to say
it. He was brilliant.
You know, it's like, listen, anybody else out there who thinks that there's a better guy in ROH right now, you need to have your head examined. Go get it done quickly. And then maybe he'll super kick you, and then maybe you'll really understand. Adam, listen, Adam Cole is amazing. You know, but here's the thing: he's also benefited from being in matches with guys who are good. And, you know, Elgin has become a guy who I used to not really have a lot of love for. Now it's like I watch him work, and it's like he's so good. And Jay Briscoe, you know, when given the opportunity to really shine, he's always on point. So it's like Adam Cole has really benefited from being, you know, around other guys who are good, and they help really elevate him. And it's like you look at the stuff from PWG with him also. When you put him in with a guy who's really good, he takes that next step, and that's what shows you that he's going to be a real great one at some point down the line, is that he really does answer the bell to perform with really high-level talent.
I think Elgin's been clicking really well this last year, and yeah. I think a lot of it has been with the stuff he's done with Adam Cole. I think they have really good chemistry in the ring, and I think they really feed off each other. It's a good pairing.
A guy who's like a straight-ahead wrecking ball versus a guy who has that sleazy kind of win-at-all-costs kind of attitude, it works really perfectly. It's like it's the blue-collar guy with Elgin versus that, you know, that sleazy, you know, stockbroker type with Adam Cole. And it's like it just works. It's always going to work because people will always react to those two characters because they're traditional wrestling characters. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, going back to the well and doing something that's worked before because there's a reason it works. It's because people react to it.
I think it's funny that Cole is kind of what Jim Cornette had envisioned, I think, him to be as a babyface, but as a heel, which is like this definitive stereotype of what a wrestler, like a Ric Flair-ish wrestler, but like it's totally working because of the atmosphere of the entrance, just the outfoxing of his opponents that he does, like he did in this match. It all like, come together.
He always seems to be like one step ahead. And it's like, you know, you show your cards and he has one card better, and you're kind of like, how the fuck did he do that?
It's kind of like, funny. You know, Adam Cole is kind of what I envisioned what they were thinking when they told Roderick Strong to be a heel. You know, kind of like that. He's a jock. He'll outsmart you. He'll out-wrestle you. But there's also this quality about him. You just want to punch him in the face. Adam Cole has that, whereas Roderick Strong, yeah, the Camp Strong thing, it works, but it's something missing. And I think, I don't know what it is.
It's a swagger thing. Roddy Strong, while he's a great wrestler, and we all love him as ROH fans, he doesn't have that swagger. He doesn't have that thing that, you know, the je ne sais quoi, if you will, that Cole has.
Real quick, as an aside, you know what? I actually don't think they've hit that Camp Strong thing quite strong enough, no pun intended. I really think – it's the second point I made this episode, by the way. I really think that what they should have done is made that like a workout club and have like, I don't know, bring Tank Tolan back or something and have them like do squat reps and all that kind of shit and like mock people for not being strong enough. I think that they could have done a lot of cool stuff with that and have that swagger come out of Roderick Strong and do that kind of Camp Strong thing because I think there's something to that. But
I think that's why the Dojo Bros work, because you have Cole and Eddie Edwards and Roderick Strong, who we all know, obviously they work out, they love doing that. And what they all kind of have in different strengths in different ways really blends well. You know, you get the idea that these are three guys in the gym who, if they really wanted to annoy you, could probably do it. And, you know, if Roger Strong could capture that just himself, that would be it. But I think Adam Cole does a little bit better job at it. And of course, him being the world champion doesn't hurt. And
it's
like,
it's totally a personality thing. And it's just, you know, well, it's not, I don't want anybody to think that we're like kind of like knocking Roddy Strong, because we're not. But it's just he doesn't have that strain in his personality that Adam Cole does, obviously. You know, some people have it, some people don't. Roddy Strong just doesn't have that part of his personality, and it is what it is. Having Chris Hero, though, come back at the end, I thought it was really cool. You know, when I heard he was wrestling the opening match at that CZW show the same night, I kind of sat there and I was like, wait a minute, how's he going to make it from Philly, you know, in time for this show? It's like, how long are they going to stretch out these matches to make sure he gets there by, like, you know, the main event time, which is usually around, like, you know, 10:30-ish, 10:45. I was like, there's
and in horrible
no way
weather.
He's going to do this.
And horrible weather, and with a stolen car that was his buddy's car that he was using, and it was stolen. I mean, it just seemed like all the forces were against him actually making it to the show, and he made it. So I think that in itself is a pretty fun story.
It was kind of funny how both CZW and Ring of Honor, and I said this on the year interview with Jerome Cuson and Ryan Rizanski, is that you put the two shows together. They both had big returns at the end of their shows. One, of course, Sick Nick Mondo, the other Chris Hero. You would think I would say the Chris Hero return was better, but honestly, I felt that CZW overall had a little bit of a more satisfying show, and that is hard for me to say because, you know, Ring of Honor is my thing. I've always loved it. But CZW kind of put that package together, and the match that he had with Gulak was pretty darn good. So maybe if he had been in Ring of Honor and done the tag match, maybe I'd be saying something different. But hey, I think it all kind of worked out. Why don't we talk about some of the things coming out of Final Battle? And let's just start with the main event. Chris, I got to get your thoughts. Adam Cole and Matt Hardy, they're a thing.
All right.
Come on.
oh, boy. Here we go.
Okay. All right, because I am a huge supporter of Adam Cole, I'm gonna go with it. You know, my fiance is actually sitting behind me right now laughing because she knows how much I hate Matt Hardy,
right?
And how repulsed I was when he beat Adam Cole last year at that ROH show. That
oh,
I was like,
yes.
I was despondent for like the rest of the night. It's like I was like, and Ari will tell you too. I mean, I was pissed off to begin with at that show. But I was like despondent after Cole lost. So listen, if they think it's going to work, I don't think Adam Cole needs to have somebody like Matt Hardy with him. It's just unnecessary. But, you know, if you want to put him with a guy who's going to automatically draw heat from the ROH crowd, you couldn't pick somebody better than Matt Hardy. Maybe bring back Jim Cornette to be his manager. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's like if you really want to stir the shit, you know, and make Cole even worse than he already is. Putting him with Matt Hardy would definitely be the fuel on the fire that you need. I honestly don't think ROH needs Matt Hardy, but that's just my two cents. I mean, I don't think they need him. I don't really think they benefit that much from having him, you know, on the roster and at the shows. Somebody might disagree with me, and that's cool. I appreciate the fact that you have your opinion. I just don't think they need him. I don't think they need him.
Well, Chris, I don't want to keep you from your. Well, Ari, before you say that, Chris, I don't want to keep you from your fiance. So if you have to go, let us know.
No, we're cool. It's not dinner time yet. I got a little bit of time yet. That's okay.
Awesome. Okay, Ari, go ahead.
She doesn't even care. She's just ignoring me anyway.
That's how that works. I mean, I'm coming to learn this.
She's been at work since like, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. So the last person she wants to deal with right now is my dopey ass.
There you go. What the hell was I going to say? I think, I mean, obviously Matt Hardy is, you know, the whole thing with him and Adam Cole has been pretty stupid from the start, going back a year ago. I really think Cole would have been much better off having defeated Matt Hardy a year ago, as opposed to having lost to him, but that's in the past. What can you do? I don't mind him up with Adam Cole as sort of like the protege thing, or the J.J. Dillon-esque advisor, which is what Dave Meltzer described it as in one of his reports. I just think PWG has already shown that Adam Cole can be the best heel Adam Cole can be just on his own. Although, again, with him, now he's teaming up with Kevin Steen and the Young Bucks as, you know, Mount Rushmore. So
it's Matt
maybe there
Rushmore.
Is something to be said about Matt Rushmore. I'm sorry. Yes. Sorry, my apologies.
It's okay.
I like Jeff Rushmore better, but you know, what do you need to do? it's fine. I'm sure they'll get some mileage out of it. And the Ring of Honor fans seem to love to hate Matt Hardy. I will tell you this though, going live, back to live experience. You know, Matt Hardy got a superstar level reaction coming out. And it wasn't just because he was one of the first people out. It was, I think, people really generally reacted to him and his presence. And to counter what Mikio was saying, unfortunately, what I've been I heard through a friend of a friend that some of, or maybe through a reporter somewhere, and I can't remember now, that some of the Matt Hardy segments on the SBG networks are getting really high ratings. So, you know, it's there seems to be reasons that they're keeping Matt Hardy, and
he did used to be in WWE, and his brother's a big star,
and so
that's
did
gotta count
and so
for
did
something.
Chris Hero. So did Chris Hero. He used to be in the WWE too.
Ouch. Yes. Well, so before we get to Hero, why don't we talk about the other faction? So we say that was created the Decade. Ari, you've been a Ring of Honor fan for as long as I have, in Mikio as well. What do you think of these guys? I mean, the idea that they've been there for 10 years and they're sick and tired of seeing guys leaving and getting adoration from the fans. I mean, I get it, but that's their motivation?
It's an interesting concept. It's a, you know, it's something, it's actually kind of something I would expect Sapolsky to do with a group in Evolve or DGUSA. So it's kind of funny to see it happen here. But I think there's a, I like it. I like the idea of it. I like the way they debuted it. Really didn't see it coming. And I think that's why it worked, the crowd, with Whitmer coming back in the first place and then feeding out to you know, have the whole attack there, have Strong do the half Nelson backbreaker. I think it has the danger, though, of becoming almost Age of the Fall-like in that there is no ultimate end goal. I think for right now, you know, and again, there's been so many things where, like, we just got off of the whole scum angle where we have people who are trying to end Ring of Honor. And that's not what the decade's goal is, but it's certainly like an anti-honor group. And I kind of get that because there's always been an anti-honor group established in Ring of Honor, whether it's the Prophecy or if it's CZW's forces or if it's Steen's faction or scum. At that point, you know, there's always this group of people who are intent on subversing and corrupting the Ring of Honor concept. But I'm interested to see where it goes. Definitely with guys like Hiro coming back, AJ Styles coming back, there are people that you can just plug right in and make their points known right away. Like, I mean, Jacobs has ample ammunition to cut promos on guys like AJ Styles. Oh, you came back now, you know, because you're looking for a payday and, you know, you had nowhere else to go and that kind of stuff. You can say that to Hiro if he wants to. You know, there's nothing else for you. You couldn't make it up there, so now you want to make it here, but now we have a problem with that. I think that's fine. I also think the other problem is maybe like something I saw in the first promo where it's another Jimmy Jacobs vehicle, and I mean, his promo style, the rapid fire delivery, talk about all the evils and the things that have happened against all the things they have to rally against. It's good. It feels a little bit, you know, we've seen this before. You know, we've seen this before.
Can I just insert myself for a second here?
Yeah, go ahead.
This guy has gotten more vehicles out of one promotion than most people own in their lifetime. It's, you know, with the guy, listen, nothing against Jimmy Jacobs, but how many more times are you going to give him a vehicle that goes nowhere?
You know what I mean? I would have loved for him to stay face. I don't understand why they have to turn him heel so soon.
It's like, you know, why does he consistently need this? If you're good enough, you don't need to have a vehicle every 2 years because they can't figure out a way to get you over.
But I want one. I want a power wheel.
It is kind of funny because he is over, and he was over. He was doing fine when he had to do the five gauntlet series, and he won three, and he's getting a title shot at I think it was Night of Pursuit, Night One, or
Pursuit
probably
Night One.
Pursuit. Yeah, Pursuit Night One. And it's like the fans were embracing him again because he had just come off the scum angle, and we all kind of want to like Jimmy Jacobs. You know what I mean? Because we respect what he does in the ring, and they're not. They are heels, but they're kind of, in a weird way, sticking up for Ring of Honor. There's that meta commentary, like you said, Ari, of we're the guys that have been here, and there's everyone else coming and going and using Ring of Honor like a stepping stool. I don't know. I just find it kind of awkward the way
it's
rehashed.
Yeah.
To me, it's like an Island of Lost Toys circumstance.
Yeah, because they have Roderick Strong in there, and God knows. What was he doing?
Three guys you don't know what to do with, so you put them together and you go, okay, well, what's the only thread that we have that might unify these three guys? Okay, they've been here forever.
Yeah.
There's no creativity.
On the other hand, I like that they reunite Jacobs and Whitmer because there is a long story to history going back to the, you know, Gabe Sapolsky days. And I like that they've really kind of, if you think back to the stuff that happened this year, they followed through on that because Whitmer was the guy who got Nigel to give Jacobs a chance again and got him the series. And then, you know, he got inserted into this match at the final battle, 2013. And I think that team works. But I also think that Strong and Whitmer could really be overwhelmed here if they don't stick up for themselves, because that promo, the first promo of the decade, it was dominated by Jacobs, and Strong and Whitmer were there as sort of like they got one line a piece or something like that. I really would like to see each of them come out equally and have something to say about it, because I think if they're all wrong, then they would each have their take on it other than just going with just Jacobs. So I'd like to see a more democratic sharing of their grievances here.
Yeah, I would too. I do think that Whitmer and Strong, if they have something that they really can contribute, that they should. Because it should be a group akin to the Shield in the sense that there's no leader of the group. They're all three equals. And I think that's hopefully what we'll get from the decade.
I don't know. Jacob seems to be the mouthpiece so far, which is fine. And
I've
loved Jacob's promos ever since. I mean, the stuff he cut in 2006 with the original BJ Whitmer feud is some of the best promos he's ever cut, and he's done plenty of that since. So, I mean, the guy can talk, and he should talk, but I'd like to make sure that the others don't get lost in the shuffle.
And finally, let's get to Chris Hero. I know that he's the returning guy, and obviously an indie darling. We love all of his work. But I do have to put the idea on this and that. He steps into Ring of Honor, and he's basically in the title picture. And I know I'm probably going to sound like Ryan Rezansky right now, but I think Ryan has a really good point when he says, you bring a guy back from WWE, why do they always get the almost just pushed into the title picture? I think Hero deserves it in a weird way because of who he is and what he's done in the past in Ring of Honor, but it does feel like he just kind of, oh, look, I'm back in the main event, and he's not the number one contender. I think it's Jay Briscoe, but he's in the top five.
London came back, and he didn't immediately get a title shot. I mean, we can talk about the 125 show in a little bit if we want to, because there's only the two main events are announced. But, it's taken him about a year for him to get, a title shot. So
that is true.
There's exceptions. I think the problem with, Chris Hero is necessary for the main event. He's a main event talent. It doesn't matter if he came from WWE, TNA, New Japan, whatever. He left one of the main event talents in Ring of Honor, and the tag team, in PWG, he was in the singles main events. And the guy is a main event talent right now. Ring of Honor desperately needs someone like him to kind of be another guy like him and AJ Styles. They're going to come right in and get put in that upper card main event scene because that's where they should be. That's where they work best, and that's where you can get the most out of them right now. So I have no problem whatsoever with any of that.
Mickey, what are your thoughts on Chris Hero and where he's returning?
Because of who he is, and like Ari said, what his standing was with the promotion before he left, it only makes sense to kind of insert him into that. The other reason is that there's no guarantee with how long he's going to be around. So if you put him into that top grouping right off the bat, you're not going to have him go through a couple of feeling out matches. You're going to get him in there with the guys you want to see him with because of the unpredictable nature that you don't know. In 3 or 4 months down the line, he might maybe gets an offer from Japan. Maybe he gets an offer to go back, into WWE, into NXT and WWE, whatever it might be. Go to a promotion like TNA. Who knows? So you want to strike while the iron is hot with him. Get him in those matches that you want to see, that you think can draw, and let that be. Now, if he winds up staying longer term, then you can kind of, after you have this, this quick push at the beginning, then you can cool it out and then maybe bring it back again. But there's no reason he shouldn't be there. Like you said, it's the guy who's kind of agreed to be on a bunch of shows coming up, going forward. Whereas like the difference with him and Paul London is the fact that Paul London is mercurial. He comes and goes as he pleases. He doesn't make long-term commitments to anything. So it's like you wouldn't put him into a title match because you don't know what he's going to want to do next. At least the one thing that you could say about with Chris Hero is that, he wants to wrestle. He wrestles. That's what he does for a living. He doesn't, look at wrestling as, something he does on the side. He looks at wrestling as his life. So in that sense, that's important to think that way. And that's why you want to put him in that top thing and not just have him as an attraction match like they did you know, with London when he faced, you know, when he went up against Davey Richards up in Canada, or when he made his other appearances. That just makes sense to do it. It's the right time. It's the right place.
Speaking of guys that we probably want to see Chris Hero face sometime in Ring of Honor, AJ Styles has made his return. He made his return this past weekend, actually, of the time of this recording for the TV tapings, which we will get into later on. But for right now, let's just talk about AJ Styles and the overall. He's been announced for several shows throughout Ring of Honor, I think up until March?
April. They just announced April.
Okay, awesome. So we know he's going to be in Ring of Honor for the next 4 months. What do you guys think of this? I think personally it's really good to have him on long term. There's a ton of fresh matchups for him in Ring of Honor. Whether we only see him on TV, since they don't technically do live eye pay-per-views anymore. I guess, Ari, what are your thoughts on this? I would say you probably agree that it's a good thing.
I mean, it's awesome that AJ's back, and I think the same thing Mikio just said about Hero counts here. I mean, you want to put him in as many matches as you can with the guys that the guys that will make it worth it. And I'm just so excited to see him go up against guys like Michael Elgin and Hero and Steen, and even guys like Kyle O'Reilly and ACH. I think would be very intriguing, matches. And obviously, I think there were rumors of an Epic Encounter rematch with Paul London at some point, maybe at the anniversary show. Although I haven't seen that come from, I heard that on one forum, but I haven't seen it corroborated anywhere else. So let's not put that out there as a definite. But I mean, it would be great to see any of those matches because, you know, AJ Styles, you know, say what you will about how he's been used in TNA or whatever, the guy is a really good talent, and he's always been really good in Ring of Honor. And always put in a lot of effort in Ring of Honor. And I think it's going to be great to see him. Now, does he have a long-term future here? I don't know. And you know, he'll tell you himself, it's going to be really hard for him to convince people that he's really gone from TNA at this point, or if, you know, there's some sort of secret agreement for him to come back. I would just tell people, look, you know, don't worry about that. You know, it's whatever happens down the line. Again, you know, Chris Hero could get signed to go back to WWE at any second, and he'd be gone too. For right now, for the beginning of 2014, I mean, it's really good to have AJ Styles come in. And you know, unfortunately, what happened to Strong at the TV tapings, we can obviously talk about GST convention later. But I think in general, this is nothing but a good thing. It's nothing but something for the fans to really enjoy. And, you know, however much it costs, whatever the stipulations are, even if he's gone at the end of April, the fact that we got him again for 4 months is really good. I mean, it's like when Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, this is, you know, again, going back to our podcast of Honor tapings here. I have no idea what to call him anymore. When he was fired from the WWE a couple years back and Ring of Honor didn't get him, it was almost befuddling to me. I was like, what the fuck, man? Why wouldn't you reach out to him and sign him for a match no matter what the cost? I mean, it only makes, you know, I would say financially, if you can get him for a match and pimp the hell out of it, then do it. And they never got to do it. And with AJ Styles, that opportunity is there now. And Styles was important to a lot of people in the beginnings of Ring of Honor. And, you know, all I know is I'm looking forward to some AJ Styles in Ring of Honor again for however long it lasts. I hope, you know, if anything, maybe they can get him to a long-term contract. But if he goes back to TNA eventually, that's the way it is, man. Just enjoy it the way it is now.
Yeah, I don't really know how much has to be said about the Roderick Strong incident. For anyone that doesn't know, this is not a spoiler, but during the match, he took a Styles Clash, landed. There's footage out there on the internet. You can check it out. It's not. Yeah, he tucked his head, or Roderick Strong looks like he tucked his head too early, kind of took like a pile driver. He wasn't able to perform at the Evolve tapings this weekend, but from all reports, he's seemingly okay, and he's seeing doctors about it, but so far it doesn't seem like there's any long-term ramifications. So, I mean, other than that, I don't really know any thoughts that we have to give on it other than that. Chris, who are some of the guys in Ring of Honor right now, if you could book it, that you would want to see against AJ Styles?
I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him in a – I don't know if I came through. I probably didn't. I'd like to Cole. I mean, if you're going to start him at the top, start him at the top. But something that makes me want to see him fight with Kevin Steen. I think for some reason, I think they could have a really, really good match. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I think that would be cool. And then to kind of maybe see him revisit some of the guys who've been around for a while, who he might have faced in his earlier ROH days. Maybe Jay Briscoe, somebody like that. And then, you know, like with Ari suggesting the idea of maybe them bringing back Paul London for an epic return match with those two guys. I mean, good Lord, any ROH fan worth his salt would want to see that like in a heartbeat.
Was that like 12 years late?
Yeah,
12. Wait, was that late 2002? Yeah. So it is 12. Yeah. Jeez.
So, I mean, who wouldn't want to see that?
We are so old.
And then, maybe throw him in a tag team match here or there with somebody, you know, throw him in with somebody interesting. Maybe even throw him in with like a Jay Lethal as his teammate, you know, with the TNA kind of connection, whatever. And then, you know,
team them up against the Decade.
Against the decade, or even, you know, maybe even give him a match against, you know, Adrenaline Rush, where you can get some of that real high line kind of stuff going on. Or maybe even have him do an open challenge, you know, with and take a surprise partner and get a run against Red Dragon. So, I mean, you know, there's so many possibilities. And, you know, why not go for a match that would probably work out pretty well? Do Hero versus Styles.
Yeah, I'm still shocked that Smash Wrestling is the only promotion right now that has that match announced. I don't understand how they're the only ones, but that's how it works.
Right. It just seems like an obvious thing to go. If you're only gonna have these guys for a limited amount of time, why not put them in the match together?
Yeah.
I do actually like
show with Danielson back in the independent scene. It's like, yeah, you're gonna obviously put them together. You have to.
Exactly.
It just seems like the logical thing to do.
Yeah, I actually really like Ari. One of the matches you said of Kyle O'Reilly versus AJ Styles, I think that would be pretty darn good. I think their styles would clash so well.
I think there's a lot of potential there with the Steen match. You know, I guess speaking of styles clashes and all that, I think it's not the Outlaws Inc. Red Dragon type of bad, but I can kind of see that the Styles Steen match might not click as well as people might think it would click. I think it really depends on the tempo and what they're looking to get out of it. So that's not the most wanted match I want to see. Obviously, I would like to see him against Elgin and Cole the most, but that's obvious. And O'Reilly and ACH, if they can really get it in before, you know, any kind of bigger commitments happen, or if he's there for the entire year, then you can definitely fit those in no problem and really sell a nice, I won't say B show, but like a show that's, you know, maybe not as big as a Glory by Honor or Best in the World or something like that. Like a nice house show with that kind of match would really kind of, I think, help lift it up. In the same way, like Kenta coming in and wrestling guys like Seidel and Delirious and other stuff really kind of made the most out of the B shows and the house shows. You're really, really getting a lot out of those guys when you do that, put them up against the roster talent.
Well, before we get to the TV tapings and a lot of the things that are coming out of there, a lot of news and feuds, Ari, there was a topic that you wanted to talk about, and I know this is near and dear to your heart. Jim Cornette. We really do. We do. It's Jim Cornette. Guys, there's another shoot out there. He has his MLW podcast, which I personally kind of think people should listen to. Maybe not the Jim Cornette experiences, but the MLW podcast in and of itself I think is really entertaining with Court Bauer, who is now with Ring of Honor. He's going to help them out with their marketing and branding of their promotion, so I think that's really good. And, of course, Conan the Booker of AAA out of Mexico. But anyway, Jim Cornette also has a podcast on there, and he recently did a shoot interview with Kayfabe Commentaries. Ari, apparently some of the things he said on there, he's as inflammatory as he always is, kind of bit you a little bit, huh? You wanted to get some thoughts out there about it, so have at it.
No, actually, I didn't. But no, we did talk about this off the air. And I haven't, I'll say this, I haven't seen the Kayfabe Commentaries video yet. So, and I don't think I will. I did listen to the interview that Cornette did with Stu Rogers over at the Indie Corner podcast. And that's the one that, you know, he really kind of opened up and talked about his past and his history in Ring of Honor, stuff that kind of led into him on the cusp of, you know, doing these talking things in the UK. And a lot of this stuff, there's a lot of fallout from that interview, including the Samoa Joe non-story that, you know, Joe felt, you know, coming out of the story Cornette told about how he and Delirious were discussing if Joe and Styles were available from TNA, would they bring them in, or have they lost their value? And Joe got the wrong impression and thought that was like what they meant now, that they didn't want him. And Ring of Honor had to clarify that, no, that Samoa Joe is in fact welcome in Ring of Honor from any point, you know, would choose to come back. And I think that's obvious. But then there was that. There was the story about Steen and Generico not being workable with him. But, of course, you know, his grudge with Steen and, you know, the situation with Generico not wanting to sign a long-term contract because he had plenty of dates elsewhere and he wanted to go to WWE in the long term. So, you know, look, a lot of what Cornette – and then that story, I'm sorry, if I just go back to that quickly. That story was refuted that Sapolsky, Gabe Sapolsky had told Adam Pearce, and Pearce had told him, and he had told Delirious that, like, these were guys that were hard to work with, and Sapolsky and Pearce said that they never said those things. So, you know, Cornette has said a lot of stuff in recent months to drum up interest, I think, for his shoot interviews and on the stuff that he's been doing. And, you know, and people have been paying attention to it, but I have no time for it anymore. And I think, you know, although I think he has a lot of good points about, and obviously him being there, he knows, he has his perspective. He was there. He knows what it was like to deal with the SBG corporate people. And he knows, and I'm sure that there was a lot of sleazy things and things that they didn't, things that he didn't like that really you and I wouldn't like. And I'm sure that there were issues that he went through that you and I wouldn't want to go through and stuff like that. But to me, I think, you know, it was never about the iPay-per-view stuff he gets flack for. And I don't think he ever should have gotten flack for it because it was not in his control. But I think the stuff that is in his control, he just doesn't own up. He never, ever takes responsibility for the stuff we see on screen that he was in charge of. And yeah, I know the whole story is on both he and Delirious shared booking decisions and all that, but I'm sorry. You look at some of the stuff that was on TV, some of the booking choices, some of the talent choices, who to bring in, you know, and again, you know, guys like Mike Mondo, the Headbangers, you know, and I'm sorry, but who do you think really brought those guys in? Was it Delirious or was it Jim Cornette? Do you think that, you know, doing the lawyer scene with Kevin Steen, that promo that made Kevin Steen look like a yutz, and was just the most over-the-top stuff that really kind of just didn't work at all. Whose decision was that? I don't think it was Kevin Steen, because if you look at what Kevin Steen was doing with his guerrilla footage, you know, shooting promos outside of the Hammerstein, you know, that is completely different. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I think Cornette says that is probably right and is probably close to accurate, but I think the fact that he doesn't own up and doesn't take responsibility for anything that he never thinks that he's done anything wrong. And, you know, Stu Rogers in that interview asked him, it was a question from one of his friends. Do you think you did anything wrong, or were there mistakes you make, anything you would want to do again or in a longer from a book stance? And he said, no. And I think you look at that time frame and you just go, how can you say that? How can you book like Dan Severn? And I know they wanted Ken Shamrock, but how can you put Dan Severn in there and have him beat up Michael Elgin and chase him to the back and just do this thing that really just, it just did not work, did not click, and not take responsibility for the fact that it didn't work. So, no, I didn't hear the longer commentaries. I think Chris GST, if you want to talk about it a little bit, what he said. He said specifically, I did hear about the thing he said about the Greg Gillibrand, the office worker there. And Steen says, you know, that he never had any problems with him there. And Steen says a lot. I mean, there's obviously three sides. There's Cornette's side, Steen's side, and then, you know, whatever the middle is. But for me, I just have no interest anymore in listening to what Cornette has to say about Ring of Honor or anything really until he decides to take up a little bit of personal responsibility for some of the things that he's done and he was responsible for that just didn't work, you know, until that happens. I really couldn't care any less to hear anything else about him.
I really have nothing to add to that. I share your sentiments in the sense that I listen to a lot of shoot interviews, quote unquote, you know, I realize that they're there also for an entertainment value. We're going to get the perspective of the person talking. That's fine. You know, that's all fair, as they say in Love and War. But to much to what you said, I've never heard Cornette take responsibility for some of what could subjectively be called bad booking decisions. And you know what? Even if he thinks they're good, acknowledge that people, your fans, who are your most important asset, said these were bad. And if you think it was good, that's great. But if they didn't say it was, and it didn't, you know, work the way it should have, and people didn't pay to see it, then how can you say that it was a success? You know, that's like saying that Prometheus the movie was a success when it wasn't. And anyone can defend the writing on it. Great, go ahead. But financially, it didn't work, and that's the, you know, that's the bottom line. Did it make the fans want? Did they have the reaction that you wanted? And no, they didn't. And Cornette just always says, oh, that's just because they're a bunch of internet fans. It's like, really? You're going to basically group us all in one bubble and dismiss us? I think that's a little reprehensible.
Well, do you remember the contract, the quote-unquote contract he started when he came back, that he wrote to the Ring of Honor fans about how he would always listen to their opinions and he would value what they had to say? And, you know, the Ring of Honor wouldn't be like other companies under his watch. You know, Ring of Honor wouldn't, under his watch, wouldn't be like other companies. Well, he broke that pretty quickly, didn't he?
But the thing is, anybody who fell for that, they would fall for buying the Brooklyn Bridge too. I mean, it's like a guy who has a track record of having the same results happen all the time. How would you ever believe him to be honest about it? You knew he was full of shit. I mean, I have no problem with Cornette. I think he's a guy who's been around the business forever. There's a reason he's been around the business forever. You know, he's had great ideas in the past, and I'm sure he still has great ideas in his head now for the future. But at the same time, it's like it just smacked of such bullshit. And it's like, that's the thing. It's like ROH always was out in front of knowing what their fans wanted and just seemingly getting it right. Now you have a guy who's running the show and then denying he's running the show, being like, oh, this is my new agreement with you. It's like, don't say it, fucking do it. And he never did it. And it's like, it was just maddening to hear this guy drone on, you know, all the time about, we're trying to give the fans what they want. It's like, no, you're not. You're giving yourself what you want. It's like giving somebody a Christmas present that you really want to have around your house and then wrapping it up and getting it to them and saying, hey, Merry Christmas. And they're like, oh, thanks. And you're like, it'll be great. And you know the reality is that the only reason you wanted it is because you wanted it.
Yeah, I don't know how many people were really wanting to see Mike Mondo back again, but no one. That's what we
no
got.
No one wanted to see him to begin with, and that's the problem. There are certain parts that don't fit in certain machines, and there are certain wrestlers who will never fit in certain promotions, no matter how hard you try to jam them in the hole. It's just not going to work. And it's like, you know, maybe it's worked out for Bennett, but it took Bennett how long to actually start being ROH worthy, if you will?
You know
what I mean? Well, my issue with Bennett, and not to rehash history, is never him. I thought he was a really good wrestler all the way from the start before they even had an idea of what to do with him, and he was doing tryout matches. I was just always averse to his, like, the big push, which again was a Cornette idea. To have like Kerry Silkin and Jim Cornette come on and say, we pursued this guy, he's a free agent, he's like the best and the best thing, and then just like to shove him down your throat, and it just didn't work to me. I thought that all rang hollow. And then on the other side, to see him talk about the SSB, the Super Smash Brothers, and what they were doing in 2010 when they were on HDNet, and they had some really good outings with the Wolves and the Young Bucks, and then like they just up and disappeared. They weren't used anymore. And, you know, to hear what Cornette had to say about them, again, the fact that, like, he thought that they couldn't be used to sell tickets or that they wouldn't be marketable. I mean, these guys are a video game gimmick to selling to a 20-something audience who totally knows the gimmick, totally gets it. And you could sell a million different masks to the kids who come to the audience, a player who knows masks, and they're good in the ring. You know, the fact that you don't see money in them, and again, it goes to show how that whole thing about him being out of touch, in certain ways he definitely was, because he didn't see how guys could have been used.
When you think about it, it goes back exactly what you said, never taking ownership of making mistakes. It's like, you know, you can't see it. He just doesn't see it, and he's unwilling to see it. And it's like, the thing that and we talked about this off the air before, the thing that bugs me the most is, like, it's just, he just always has the axe to grind. It's like,
be positive about something. It's like everyone's not out to get you. And if they are out to get you, there's probably a reason they are. And it's probably because you did something. You know, it's like you don't draw animosity just from being, you know, from drawing breath. You obviously have to do something to get people to get to the point where they want to get rid of you.
Yeah. And I know, like, just him coming in and taking over and without saying anybody's name, there's a certain person who definitely, once he came in and was on the outs, you know, and left to go to another promotion, and just the way he was treated on the first day of Cornette's deal, where, like, all the effort he put in to work on HDNet and all that, and then for him to be sort of relegated and not be treated as someone who could contribute, you just there are things that Cornette viewed like, oh, I'm going to use my ideas and my guys, and I'm going to do my thing. And again, it's what Mikio said about the Christmas present for himself. And it's just like, no, you're not working for yourself. You're working for everyone else. And the thing about, the thing about guys like Sepulveda and even Pierce, to a certain extent, although Pierce can certainly lay blame about the Tara Black push for a certain, not giving the fans that quicker than they wanted. But, you know, when things were working, they went with them. So you got to go with what works, what people are responding to. And, you know, of course they had to go with Steen and you know, get work with him and push him in the top, because the fans were outright flat out demanding that Kevin Steen be in the main event and be in the title match, because they fucking loved him. And the way they responded to him, you'd have to be completely blind not to use him. So he used him. You know, he didn't like him in the Jericho feud, but guess what? That was the best thing that happened in Ring of Honor in 2010 was that Steen Jericho versus Cabana and Steen Jericho feud with Cabana and Carino involved, and then the tag title scene with the Kings of Wrestling in the top, feuding against the Briscoes. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot to say about all that, but the bottom line is, for me, Cornette is not in Ring of Honor right now, and look at the difference. You know, look at how Ring of Honor is, you know, using its talents now, as reaching out to its fans now. It's not perfect. I mean, I will continue to slag them when they get things wrong, but you know, they're certainly in a much better position now than the growing pains of the initial era of SBG. And you can hate on the SBG corporate guys for making Ring of Honor more corporate, and you know, you can hate on certain people for being used, but you know, it's and doing their jobs. But at the end of the day, I as a fan, I see with the Ring of Honor at the beginning of 2014 now as far stronger than it was in the middle of 2011, the beginning of 2012, and even the beginning of 2013. I think there's a lot of, like, the scum angle and the stuff that kind of had to be done to kind of move away from Cornette's stuff. It needed to be done. And now that we're there, it's a far stronger Ring of Honor than it used to be.
Absolutely. And I guess we're still waiting for Michael Bennett to win a title in Ring of Honor. Still waiting?
It'll happen.
It'll happen, yeah. Okay, so I think that's about enough Cornette talk as anyone cares to do. At this point, we're going to talk about the TV tapings that took place January 4th in Nashville. Of course, the big return of AJ Styles. We're going to spoil some things, so if you don't want to know those spoilers, feel free to check out right now, and thanks for listening to the Podcast of Honor. However, if you're crazy enough to continue listening to us and you want to know our thoughts on this, let's dive right into this, guys. One of the major stories in this is the Top Prospect Tournament. We have Raymond Rowe, Kongo, Andrew Everett, which I think is fantastic. He's making his Ring of Honor debut. Corey Hollis, Mike Posey, Hansen, and the Romantic Touch. None of us know who that is.
No idea.
And then Cheeseburger, of course, one of my favorites, honestly. A guilty pleasure of mine is Cheeseburger on Ring of Honor shows.
Who doesn't like a cheeseburger?
Exactly. They didn't go through the entire tournament, but we do have some results. Just the one thing I want to ask you guys. So Bill Daly, I'm assuming both of you have read the results. He was supposed to have a match with Corey Hollis. He basically came out and declined because of a high ankle sprain, and he quit the tournament. I didn't read anywhere that this was legit. I could be completely incorrect about that, but even if it is, what was the point? This is supposed to be the Top Prospect Tournament. It's supposed to be important. You know, guys like Andrew Everett are in this. I don't know. Guys, I guess,
I actually saw Bill Daly in the pre-show, I believe, the benchmark thing. And He was pretty.
Yes, you
pretty
did.
Good.
You did. That's right.
Yeah, he did pretty good. I kind of like his shtick a little bit. Maybe they want to add sort of like the cowardly bully type thing, where like the guy who thinks he does better, he can do better than he actually does, and so, maybe that was sort of what they wanted to do out of this. Could he have participated and gotten over there? Sure, but maybe they want to do a little bit of an end around with his character. And if that's the case, that's fine. For me, the top prospect tournament this year is not as strong as previous years, and so to me, it's not as important as previous years. But there's certainly other ways to get new talent over besides a young guy's tournament. So if they want to keep using him in the undercard and shows, then I'm sure they'll get his character over and figure out what they want to do with it on the undercard.
Yeah,
I have no lack of confidence.
I really thought that this was going to be like Andrew Everett's like tournament to win. I really did. And then when I saw that he had lost that match on the fourth episode that they taped, I was really surprised.
Yeah,
he defeated as opposed to other guys in the past who like came in really big and then lost in the opening round. I know that happened last year. I can't remember exactly. Was it? Oh God.
Wasn't Romantic Touch, I'll tell you that.
Oh no, there was somebody who came in really well, like hyped.
But I will say the guy he lost to, Hansen, he's a guy to watch. He's a big dude, but I think if you guys like the Stan Hansen, obviously kind of gimmick, he does it pretty darn well, and he's a pretty solid wrestler. I mean, obviously, these are all young guys. Andrew Everett, obviously, probably going to be one of the breakout stars of 2014, if not, if you didn't already consider him one in 2013. But I'm assuming Ring of Honor will bring him back. He's doing some good stuff everywhere. So
yeah, because he could put on some really solid matches with people. And whether you put it on early in the show, or you put it on maybe as the first match back from intermission. He could really work as a good talent for them.
Oh, I know both of you though were really disappointed to know that Kongo lost in the first the first round match. So no Kongo going forward.
Despondent. I'm despondent.
Yeah. I almost jumped out the window.
I know. It's bad stuff. So anyway, some of the, I guess, more notable news coming out of this. Ring of Honor TV title was defended. Tommaso Ciampa defeated Silas Young to retain. But I'm just glad that Silas Young, he's getting into that TV title picture right now. The match at Final Battle, the strap match, I think we all kind of agree was just kind of there.
I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. I didn't think it was, epic or anything, but I dug what they were doing with the stuff outside the ring and all that. I mean, again, there's nothing not to like about Silas Young and his character that he's doing right now.
No, that's what I mean. So I'm glad that they're kind of utilizing him in what I feel is a better way to really show what he can do. If that had been a straight match between him and Mark Briscoe, no disqualification, I probably would have liked it a little bit more. But the tagging, that part.
It was an unnecessary element.
I never get that match. But that's just me. That's just my opinion. I just don't get it.
Okay.
Then we saw Kevin Steen. He defeated Chris Hero. Chris Hero and Kevin Steen and Elgin right now, out of the taping, seemingly all of them are still in the world title picture. We see multiple on multiple episodes, their interactions, they're all fighting each other. There's even one point where Elgin comes out and he calls out Styles, Hero, and Briscoe, saying, that he's the one that should be the number one contender. None of these guys should be. Kind of looking forward to that, because I was wondering what Kevin Steen would do, because the Bennett thing, that's done, right? It's over.
Yeah, that was the end of that.
It's amazing how all the scum guys, except for Rhino, who should be back, are back. And Cliff Compton coming out as Super Domino or whatever the hell, attacking Steen. I don't know. I mean, to me, it just seems like it's another time placer or time filler.
It's like Matt Hardy's back. Cliff Compton's back. Jimmy Jacobs. Yeah, okay, obviously that makes storyline sense because, he is what he is.
But it's almost like saying, 9 months later, what happened to end scum and break them up and get them out is all. It didn't really happen. They're all back anyway. Just not as a group.
I actually don't think it's 9 months. I think it's much sooner than that. I think the whole thing ended in June, so it's
June?
6 months.
Okay. All right.
Six months for almost everyone to come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either way, I know Matt Waters probably agrees with me that Rhino should have been the one to come, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, you never know. I think these are obviously TV tapings. We should note that Ring of Honor Tag Champion Kyle O'Reilly and ACH, they were not at the TV tapings and most likely due to the weather. Obviously, the East Coast not going through a great time right now, so we'll see. But I think they made do with what they had. Obviously, some really good matches, and of course, as we mentioned before, AJ Styles made his return to Ring of Honor in triumphant form. He defeated Roderick Strong. We talked about the incident that happened at the end of the match, the final part. He took the Styles Clash. He won, but Roderick Strong did not take it very well. You know, and I see a lot of people online trying to... I don't want to say place blame because that has a negative connotation, but they're trying to figure out what happened. You just watched the video. You see Roger Strong tuck his head. You know what? Mistakes happen. I don't see why. I understand trying to analyze it and go, okay, what happened? But you know what? It's pretty obvious. Just
very unfortunate.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate accident. There's nothing else to really say about it, which is why I don't really feel like we have to like delve into, oh, what does this mean? Because it's seemingly Roger Strong's fine. You know, he was at the Evolve shows. He's not wrestling, but he was there, and he seemed okay. So I think we can move forward from that.
Here's something to talk about. Here's something to talk about for UGSD, because I know you're a big fan of him. Is Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman, they each got their the start of their singles pushes, but they each lost. So Bennett pinned Cedric Alexander in the fourth show, and I think Lethal defeated Caprice Coleman in the episode that's coming up. So... what do you think, man? Is this a bad start? Is this just sort of like nothing should be made of this? What's going on?
I kind of feel like it'd be a cop-out answer to say that it's too early to tell, but I do think it was a missed opportunity because you split them up as a team with the idea being that they're both Caprice Coleman is not young, but you know what I mean? They're going to get their starts on their singles career, and Cedric Alexander, obviously he's a young prospect. Maybe he should have been in the tournament to win it, but... Yeah. Yeah, you make them up lose, but granted, who do they lose to? So you had Coleman lose to Jay Lethal, and you had Mike Bennett, who did just come up for loss to Kevin Steen, but he is, you know, he is slightly up on the card above Cedric Alexander.
And
then, of course, he won with the Anaconda Vice, which, hey, interpret that how you will. But, you know, I kind of do think it's kind of bad, because it's like, why did they have to lose? You know, is there some big story? Well, Mike Bennett has to be kept strong. I don't see it.
Or, what probably would have worked best is that you would have one of them win and have the other one lose. And then you kind of have that, you have that give and take back and forth where it's like you can still do, you know, like you can still have a promo here and there or like an off, like, you know, like a segment on the TV show with them, you know, kind of talking to each other. Wow, you know, you've been really doing well, but I, you know, man. So hard out here to do it by myself, kind of thing like that. It would have been, it could make for a great story between those two guys.
Yeah, I think the same thing, and I think Cedric Alexander is the one to keep an eye on. He's such a good talent, and you guys, anyone listening to this, check out, they're no longer running, but Pro Wrestling Evo, check out some of the promos that Cedric Alexander does as a heel, and his work in PWX out of North Carolina. It's really good, and I think Ring of Honor has something in him. You know, anything else out of this? I mean, Jay Briscoe, he was supposed to have an open challenge to Cole, and then Bobby Fish came out and they challenged him for the Briscoe world title, which Briscoe retained.
It certainly seems like they're definitely going to have to come, you know, face-to-face again and do a title-for-title match.
It's a title unification. Because we haven't seen enough of those in wrestling right now.
No, we certainly haven't. No, we got to have one more.
Yeah, I don't know.
We gotta know, man. Who's the best?
Who's best? Gotta know who's best.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I did like
so much more to do for Jay Briscoe. I just feel like there's something else he could be doing. I'm not saying to take him out of the world title picture, but
what are you gonna do with him at this point? Put him back in the tag team with his brother?
Yeah, Mark and Jay just that would be to me a step backwards. I think. I don't know. I mean, I dig keeping him in the picture, but he defended the Briscoe world title. Like, really? This is Taz,
know,
FTW all over again.
Exactly. But you know what? I don't know. Mikio and I were really big Taz fans, obviously coming from Brooklyn.
Well,
and,
so was and, I, but, you know,
you
I, but
came it, from Brooklyn?
No, I didn't come from Brooklyn. I like Taz. Fan of Taz.
Yeah, so, I mean, when he did it, it was great. I can't say this isn't great. I actually like a lot of what he's doing.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when Taz did it, it was like one of the first times it had been done. you know, to have a guy with his own title. Now we've seen it happen a couple of times. It's like, okay, we're going back to this again. So it's a little different. It's a little different than comparing, you know, Briscoe with his own belt versus Taz with his own belt. It's a little different, but I understand what your thoughts, but I don't know. I don't see where they go from here with Briscoe. I don't. I have no idea where they're going to go with him now.
I think that may be a slightly bigger story than anything we discussed right now, is that you look at the results from these TV tapings, where is anything headed? I don't
see it. Like,
there
was a whole lot of rhyme and reason to this TV taping.
Yeah, other than, okay, so
well,
after...
Yeah,
well, there is the last part of, so after the AJ Styles and Roderick Strong match, Roderick Strong went to the back, but the Decade came out, and then I believe Elgin and Hero and Briscoe, like pretty much all the guys in the main event picture came out to help out Styles. So I guess we know who's at the top of the card, but everything else, I mean, what feuds are coming out of these TV tapings? I don't see any.
Yeah, it seems kind of like open.
Yeah, I mean, Ari, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, does anything stand out to you?
I think the Decade are going to play a huge role, and it's going to be fun. It's funny because it seemed like they sort of came from out of nowhere, but I think there's going to be a lot of stuff with them involved in mixing things up, and I certainly think that the main event mix, it's a little bit unwieldy right now, but I certainly think we're heading towards a couple things. I think we're heading towards Hero versus Cole at some point. I think we're heading towards Styles getting a title shot at some point. I think Paul London is getting a title shot at some point. I think we're going to be seeing a return to focus more on the Ring of Honor World Champion as a defending champion with people coming after him. And I think that's going to be the major storyline. And then sort of buffeted by a little bit undercard grudge matches. I tell you what, I really don't know where things are is in the tag team title scene. I'm not, because
yeah.
Again, obviously the travel issues, you know, Outlaw Inc. weren't on the card. Red Dragon is still the champs. There doesn't seem to be a top face team for them right now, other than maybe the Young Bucks as faces instead of heels. Maybe you do a face turn with them. You don't even have to do anything like overt. It's just the fans want to cheer for them. Let them cheer for them. Let them be the faces in that scenario. And maybe you can do Bucks versus the Red Dragon at the anniversary show or at the WrestleMania weekend. But it's a little bit unclear, and I guess I have to say then I would be wrong because I said, oh, well, the tag team seems to be strong. I said that last time, and now I'm not so sure. We'll see.
Yeah, the tag match we got was the Decade defeated Mark Briscoe and Adam Page after interfering in one of their matches. So if we were to name the teams off, we have the Young Bucks, Red Dragon, the Decade, and I'm pretty sure Adrenaline Rush is still a team. And that's it.
That's it.
All right. Well,
unless they create some like you know quick fire teams kind of thing like that.
And that has been kind of something that's lacking. I mean, for the longest time. I mean, how many times did we see Adrenaline Rush and CNC Wrestle Factory on like almost? It seemed almost every TV
every
episode.
Second show. Yeah.
It's like okay.
Or you won't see that anymore.
No, that is true. Unless we had singles matches out of them. No. Yeah.
Also uncertain is what's going to happen with Matt Taven and the House of Truth, because I don't know if you guys saw the YouTube clip of basically Truth Martini looking in the mirror, realizing he looks sort of like a clown and sort of like, I think almost, could he be moving away from the House of Truth as the Hoopla, you know, House of Hoopla thing that they've been doing the last year? Are they going in a new direction?
We're going to get a serious Truth Martini, Ari. Serious. I don't know what that means.
Jeez, the only thing holding that group together was that TV title. Jeez, if that's all it took to knock them over, it would have been pretty simple, right?
Well, they didn't have any pants on, so there certainly weren't any belts holding them together.
That's true.
TV belt.
Yeah. Well played, Ari. Well played.
Ari's a good one, isn't he?
Yes, well done. I mean, Taven did have one segment. I'm trying to look for it right now. It was before the TV title match between Ciampa and Young. Taven came out to shake Ciampa's hand, but Young attacked him. And then there was a post-match beatdown thwarted by Lethal and Taven, which led to a three-way stare-down. So Taven he turned. And Young,
he's a face.
Yeah, I guess he's a face.
Do you think Truth winds up with Silas Young then?
God, I hope not, because I don't think Silas Young needs him.
Yeah, I don't see that working.
Yeah. I mean, I hope not.
If you don't see it work, doesn't mean it wouldn't happen.
Yeah. That's unfortunately true. Any other thoughts, guys? I mean, that's pretty much it. There's
we
not
should
much
to
take out of these TV tapings.
Yeah, we should talk about the two main events for January 25th in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because that'll be the next show.
And our own Kevin Ford will be there. Hopefully, I believe, knock on wood, we'll be live tweeting results. Sorry, Kevin, if you're listening and you weren't planning on doing that.
Now he has to.
Yep, pressure's on. So, Ari, do you have them offhand? Because I actually don't know them off the top of my head.
I do. The two main events signed so far for Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, are a three-way tag team elimination bout with ROH World Champion Adam Cole and Matt Hardy teaming up together for the first time up against the super team of Chris Hero and Unbreakable Michael Elgin versus the reuniting Jay and Mark Briscoe brothers. So that's the first main event. And then the second main event is the two out of three falls. Winner received an ROH World Championship match February 8th in San Antonio, Texas. Paul London versus Roger Strong. And then also the finals of the 2014 Top Prospect Tournament. So that is the card signed so far.
I fully expect Matt Hardy and Adam Cole to win.
Absolutely.
That's my prediction. If they don't win, that's just not a good start.
I could see Hero and Elgin winning.
But then what would have been the point of teaming Hardy and Cole together? I mean, then they would kind of come out looking weak, wouldn't they? Because this is the first time they're teaming together and they lose.
That's true. You could have Hero go over Cole to force a title shot. I don't know.
But also think of it like this. If they team Hero and Elgin and they lose, it also can directly lead to Hero and Elgin having a match with each other.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but I think we all kind of realize that Jay Briscoe is still going to be in the title picture for a little bit because he's running around with that title. Are they going to take some emphasis off of that? Is that maybe why he's doing these quote-unquote Briscoe world title defenses instead of being – because I kind of thought with the way Final Battle ended, and Ari, you know, you remember when we talked about this with Jerome, we kind of all figured that Elgin wouldn't be the one that got pinned to keep him strong, and – boy, yeah. We were just totally wrong on that.
But you know what? I think Elgin, but like I said, Elgin can survive that. You know,
he can.
For some reason, he's been able, you know, hasn't been able to break him. That's the third pun this episode, by the way. I think, you know, it was befuddling, but, you know, he survived it. It's over with. And The next time, it's sort of like become a situation where it's like almost the next shot he gets has to be the one he wins. So I hope they have a way to get from there to there, and or if maybe that's not the direction they're going at all. You know, there's a million different ways they can go now that they have Styles and Cole and Hero and Elgin in the main event scene, and even Steen, you know. But if it was me, I'd still go with Elgin. I think he's the guy who could be a good bruiser type champion, but that's just me.
Yeah, Mikio, any thoughts on this match?
Like you kind of said, to me it wouldn't make any sense for anybody to win except Hardy and Cole. The way I see it playing out is you see some sort of dissent between, you know, Hero and Elgin. Now it doesn't have to be like a turn or anything like that, but just some sort of miscommunication. Then you have, you have Hardy probably, you know, get into it with Jay Briscoe, and then you have Cole, you know, get the fall over somebody like Mark, because, you know, for Mark it really doesn't matter if he takes the fall, because he's just, you know, he's Mark Briscoe. We all love him no matter what, and he's always going to be, you know, he's always going to be a cool guy to watch and whatever. But I think he's obviously a guy who's probably going to wind up with the shoulders on the mat.
That redneck kung fu can fit in anywhere.
Absolutely. But, and at the same time, it's not like he's somebody that they need to keep strong. It's not like he's somebody that they have a lot invested in. Obviously, with Hero, the investment is, you know, we got to strike while the iron's hot while he's here. With Elgin, it's like he's the guy that we're kind of looking at as maybe our next champion. With Matt Hardy, it's sort of like he's the guy we're paying a lot of money to bring here. We're not going to make him look stupid. Cole's our champion. We can't make him look weak. So the odd man out just screams to be Mark Briscoe.
Well, this is an elimination match, so that does mean two teams have to lose. Two people have to take a fall. Does that change your mind?
First team that loses is probably going to be, what's it called? It's probably going to be Hero and Elgin.
Okay.
Maybe a miscommunication, like Adam Cole standing in the middle, Hero goes for his, the elbow, and he hits Elgin on accident or something.
Yep.
Like that.
Something like that.
Slip on a banana peel.
There you go.
Okay.
And London versus Strong. Who do you got? I mean, for me, it's you know, the title shot's going to be in San Antonio, so it's got to be Paul London, right?
I would think so, right? I mean, now, that's where he went to school for wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just got to hope that Strong is actually going to be available and healthy enough to wrestle that match.
Oh, I mean, this is, you know, we're talking like 2 weeks away. He would hopefully know by then, you know, what his condition is.
Hopefully. Never know. I mean, it's like, you know, yeah, it's like he does know, but maybe he hasn't said anything yet.
Well, they're certainly not bringing back Davey Richards to face Paul London. That's not happening.
No, definitely not Davey Richards.
No. So, yeah, I'll still pick London, though. I mean, that to me makes sense. And, you know, it's a one-off, yeah, so why not have fun with that? So,
And then also signed on the card, you got Red Dragon in full force. You got Tommaso Ciampa. You've got Jay Lethal, Kevin Steen, Michael Bennett, Matt Taven, plus more. So that's at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in Pittsburgh.
Ring of Honor house shows are pretty good. I mean, I will say, I know we've been kind of down them. They certainly do not.
I haven't been down at them. I think they've been. I think they've been great in 2013.
Okay, great. So do I. I really thought the Golden Dream was actually. This is going to sound horrible. Slightly better. There were more matches on the Golden Dream that I liked than matches I liked on, say, Manhattan Mayhem. Even though Manhattan Mayhem overall, I think, was a better show, I think the undercard on the Golden Dream was a lot stronger. So there have been house shows that are fairly balanced out, and you know, hopefully in 2014 they continue. I don't, obviously with these past TV tapings, don't have a clue where they're going. But the house shows always seem to have a little bit more. So let's hope going forward they continue that way.
Yeah,
guys, if there's anything else, mention it now. Otherwise, I think we can wrap this episode up.
Okay, I have one plug, Chris.
There we go. Mikio, let's get some plugs in. Go for it.
The one plug is through the We Love Pro Wrestling group on Facebook. We are running a Royal Rumble giveaway. So if you're a member of We Love Pro Wrestling and you happen to be listening to this, make sure that you join the contest and get in there. We're going to be giving away some really cool stuff. I don't remember all of it off the top of my head, but if you want,
I know there's ten DVD downloads from IVP videos and some TNA DVDs.
Yeah,
there's a ton of stuff.
So it's like if you're into it, you know, it's a predictions contest. So please, you know, come through and you know, maybe you win something. It's a good time will be had by all. So I definitely would suggest you guys, you know, jump in and become part of the deal.
Trust me, those TNA DVDs are going to be collector's items. I mean. God knows when I was, you know, when we've been, buying ROH DVDs for years, we never thought there'd be a day when they wouldn't be available. And now here we are.
They're just collecting dust somewhere in my house. I don't even know where they are.
Ring of Honor needs an ROH network. That's what they need. I would probably pay for, maybe
$7 a month.
Isn't
that what the ringside membership is, GST?
No,
because you don't necessarily have access to all the libraries, and then you still have to buy some of the stuff. I'm like, it's not happening.
Well,
there would be network. You don't have to buy pay-per-views at all. I'm set.
I am so in, it hurts.
That is a win right there, sir. That's a win. So, Ari, what do you have going on?
Well, we got the podcast of Honor that we just did right now, and then we've got the Retrocast, which we've I don't know, depending on when you decide to put them out, you know, one or the other. So if you haven't listened to the Retrocast discussing Glory Beyond Honor 5, Night 2, download that right now and enjoy. It's GST, Mikio, and myself talking about Danielson versus Kenta. I mean, how can that not be awesome? And on Twitter, I'm at Ari Berenstein, ARIBERENSTEIM. And that is what is up with me.
All right, everyone, thank you for listening. Of course, if you are checking this out on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd really appreciate you leaving us a 4 or 5 star review. Get more listeners on the show. Help people find us on the interwebs. Of course, check us out on our social media, twitter.com/PWPonderings and facebook.com/PWPonderings. And, of course, the main site, PWPonderings.com, tons of reviews, results, lots of opinion pieces. Recently, I wrote what the independent wrestling industry can learn about the WWE Network or from the WWE Network. And, of course, Ring of Honor reviews up there and also at Total Wrestling Magazine out of the UK. That's twmag.co.uk. If you want to talk to me, find me on Twitter at CGSTong, that's CGSTONG, and the same thing at pwponderings.com is my email address. For Chris Micchio and Ari Berenstein, this has been the Podcast of Honor. Thanks for listening, and have a good one.
It's been phenomenal. Oh, that's four puns.
Ari, it's terrible.